Okay, so those are the 8 points. Let me just review them, okay? First is remember everything that's going well in your life. Second is enjoy the process and don't focus so much on the result. Third is think about the long-term view. Yeah, have your long-term goal and aspiration in mind. And fourth is don't get bogged down with unrealistic expectations. Then fifth is what happens could be better than what you had originally planned. And sixth is don't bother worrying. Seventh is draw inspiration from those who came before you. And eighth is know that hardships become easier and that challenges can help us to grow and increase our talents and abilities. So if we remember these and try and practice them, then we'll be able to have a very optimistic attitude towards life and towards not only our personal life, but what's happening on the planet, and towards the whole spiritual movement of sentient beings going towards enlightenment. Okay, so that's a little bit about how to live with optimism. Now the thing we have to do is practice it. Hearing about it is one thing. We have to put it into practice. Okay, so what I'd like to do now is open it for some questions. Okay, so asking about music in, developing, Buddhist songs and things like that. Yes, I think, why not? I think the group that performed before the talk, they were singing Buddhist songs with very nice lyrics that are very inspiring. So yes, I think we should, definitely have Buddhist songs. Things that inspire us, that convey some meaning to us. Another part of his question was, he was saying if you go to a temple, it's very solemn. If you go to a church, it's very joyful. I have to laugh because my experience is completely different. Okay. I go to churches and it's like so solemn. They're talking about hell and you're going to go to hell and you're a sinner and, and I'm, to me it's quite solemn. And I come into Buddhist temples and they're talking about Buddhist potential and you can become a fully enlightened being and here's how to develop love and compassion. So I have a totally different experience. But yeah, I definitely think as a Buddhist community to have music and to have all sorts of things that really appeal to people and inspire people. Personally speaking, I find the Buddhist chanting very inspiring. And the Chinese chanting, the way you do the prayers, I think is just amazing. And in fact, what I'm trying to do is to take some of the Chinese melodies and apply them to the prayers that we do in English, to the English translations. Because the Chinese was written in verse form, so it's very easy to have a beautiful melody. The English, the syllables don't come out quite as well. So it's taking a little bit of skill in learning to do this. But I personally find the Buddhist chanting very beautiful and completely, takes my mind to a very different level just listening to the chanting, either in the Chinese tradition or the Thai tradition, in my own tradition, the Tibetan tradition. Chanting is incredibly beautiful. So I find that very inspiring. Some people might like kind of more modern jazzy songs. That's fine, I mean, people have creative energy, write Buddhist songs and perform them. That's great. Some people may prefer the more traditional chanting. Other people may like new chanting. I think, we should do what works for us. Yeah.
This happened a little bit.
were asking, let me make sure I got it right, okay? You were saying that you have a friend whose relative died suddenly, and so how in Buddhism do we help people accept situations like that and go through difficulties? Okay, one of the Buddha's teachings from the very beginning is that life is transient and that things change. And so from Buddhism, from the very beginning, we are reflecting on impermanence. And we're reflecting that nobody lives forever. Yeah. And I think that reflecting on that from the beginning helps us accept people's death when it does happen. So instead of going through our lives saying, you know, nobody's going to die, we go through our lives saying, yes, we realize that we're going to be separated from our loved ones, and we ourselves are going to die. And so therefore, it's important to really value what we're doing now when we're alive. So instead of living in our heads about the future, let's live in the present and enjoy the present. Enjoy our family now. Enjoy our friends now. Okay? So in Buddhism, what we teach is how to really live in the present moment and enjoy the positive things that are happening now, knowing that everything won't last forever, and that's the reality of the situation. Then when people die, because we are prepared for it, we know that everything's transient, it's easier to accept it. And also, because we've had a life that's worthwhile with the people that we care about, we can look back on that and rejoice at what we shared with the people. Because I think a lot of times when we're grieving, we're not grieving for the past, we're grieving for the future. Okay? We're grieving because we have an idea of how we would like the future to be with somebody that we love in it, and that person is no longer here. So that future, as we had envisioned it, is not going to happen. So I think we're grieving for the future that hasn't happened yet. Okay? If we can realize this, and be able to look back at what we did share with the person we love and say how wonderful it was that I knew this person and shared, how wonderful it was that we shared what we were able to share for as long as we were there to share it together. And to look at our lives and rejoice at what we had, and then take all that love and all that goodness and go forward in our lives and share the love and goodness that we got from having the relationship with that one person. Okay? So we don't see our love as a fixed pie. And now that that person isn't there, that piece of pie is gone and it's never going to come again. But rather, love is something that can increase and grow the more we receive it and the more we give it. I remember one time I was asked to help one Microsoft executive, was a Buddhist. This was when I lived in Seattle. And he was in his 30s, he was dying, and I was asked to help him and his family. And I did, you know, I did the best I could, and I was presiding at the memorial service. And his wife was absolutely amazing. She was in her 30s. She was now left with three children, you know, without her husband, who had been her sweetheart since secondary school. But this woman was amazing. And at the memorial service, she was just recounting, you know, some of the cherished memories that she had with her husband in the 10 years they were married. And then at the end, her eyes lit up And she just said, you know, all that love that you gave me and all that love that we shared are inside of me. And now I'm just going to go forward in my life and share that love with others. And it was so moving to watch her. You know? And so I think if we can look at the situations in our lives like that and rejoice at how wonderful it was that we knew certain people and to really let that love and fortune fill us and then go out in the world and share that with others. Okay, I didn't hear everything you said. Let me repeat what I did hear and tell me if I got it. Okay. You were asking about how I met the path and if I ever had any doubts in following it, a little bit about my personal experience.
How you were like before.
Oh, how I was like before.
Changed.
Okay, how I changed. Okay. Well, how I was like before, I was worse than I am now. Okay, if you think I'm bad now, I was really a mess before. What I was like before, I had a lot of difficulty before. I didn't feel a purpose in my life. You know, I had a good education, a good family, but I didn't feel much purpose in my life. And that lack of purpose led to sometimes feeling depressed. So I have some difficulties with, you know, depression, kind of what's the meaning of my life, what am I going to do with my life. I had a lot of difficulty with anger. I'm sure people can tell you stories about me. You know, I was really quite selfish. And the worst thing was that I thought I was a pretty nice person. Okay. I think the worst thing was is that I didn't realize how selfish I was. And I didn't realize what a problem with anger I had. And I didn't realize my arrogance or my jealousy or how much clinging attachment I had. So how I've changed, I think, was one thing. Is I, you know, began to see myself more accurately. And at first it was really kind of a shock to discover that I wasn't really the best person in the world. You know, I mean, what a surprise when you think that you're pretty good. And, you know, then you look at your mind and, oh, I'm actually pretty selfish and pretty angry and hard to get along with. So that was kind of a shock to realize, but I think it was something very necessary and very important, because it's only when we can see our weaknesses and see our faults that we can start to do something about them. If we can't see our faults, then there's no way to begin the process of self-growth and self-development. So I think one thing is just being able to see myself a little bit more accurately. And in looking back over the years, I mean, just through the practice of the Dharma, first of all, my family relationships have improved a lot. You know, especially with my parents, my relationship is much better now than when I was younger, and just relationships in general with other people is better. I think because, you know, the Dharma path I learned good ethical discipline, and I think the important thing from Buddhist teaching is the Buddha really gave us a way to improve ourselves. Buddha didn't just say, love thy neighbor as thyself. It's easy to say, love everybody, but who does it? Nobody does. Okay, but what is so remarkable in the Buddha's teaching is the Buddha said, you want to love everybody? Okay, first you meditate on equanimity. Then you meditate on the kindness of others. Then you contemplate the disadvantages of self-centeredness. Then you think of the benefits of cherishing others. Then you develop courage and joy so you can take suffering and give happiness. then you develop the altruistic intention to become a Buddha for the benefit of sentient beings. And the Buddha set out this very systematic path for actually how to cultivate in our lives love and compassion and patience and endurance and all sorts of good qualities. So it isn't, you know, in Buddhism, it isn't a process of you just believe and you have faith, but it's an actual pragmatic path that you can practice step by step. And that's what I found so incredibly remarkable and valuable in the Buddha's teachings. I mean, I'm so grateful to the Buddha and to the whole lineage of teachers who have come from the Buddha to my own teachers for preserving this path, because I found that when you actually learn the Dharma and start to practice it over time, you change and your mind works and the teachings, you know, the teachings work, your mind improves. So, you know, that whole thing of perseverance and just you keep going and you keep cultivating, but it really bears results. You know, because there is a systematic path that's been tried and true throughout the centuries. Did I have doubt? I don't know. I'm not sure. You know, I mean, there were times when I had doubt, you know, kind of sometimes with the teachings, I didn't always understand them so clearly. But again, what I appreciated so much in Buddhism is the Buddha said, okay, if you have questions, if there's things you don't understand, if you have doubts, ask questions, learn, discuss, talk, you know, because in, you know, some other religions, they just say, have faith. Well, I can't do that. I can't just block out my mind. I mean, we're educated people. We can't just shut our mind off. You have questions. And some of the things that my teachers, the first things they said was, you don't have to believe anything we say. Think about it and see if it works for you. See if it makes sense logically. And I love that approach in Buddhism, because it was very much in line with my modern education, in which you're taught to think, and with science, where you're taught to investigate. I mean, in science, you don't just believe stuff. You investigate, you research. And so my Buddhist teachers had that same kind of thing. You know, you research, you investigate, you ask questions, you try it out, you examine it logically. And so that really appealed to me. And so the fact that I was able to ask questions and investigate gave a way to resolve any kind of doubts or questions that came in the mind. Okay? I just really appreciated that. So I don't know if I answered your question completely. I could go on and on, but I've already realized that I'm over time. Thank you.